Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Trend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Michael Morris. Let's get into the news of today. And the first story we're going to talk about is some new revelations about the extent of cybercrime affecting government made by new Public Works Minister Dean McPherson, who is a DA minister. He says that he suspects that cyber criminals have been working possibly with state officials and over the past 10 years have stolen 300 million rand from the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure through a number of repeated attacks. And he put this out on Wednesday morning in a statement saying that the department was a soft target to cyber attackers and him, and he promised that he and his deputy minister, Sihle Zikalala, were conducting assessments of the department's work. McPherson said that 30 department laptops had been seized by investigators and three senior management officials of the Department of Public Works Infrastructure had been suspended, and an official in a middle management role has also been suspended. The most recent attack was in May of this year, where 24 million rand was stolen in one go. And apparently that, under the previous government, had begun an investigation by the Hawks and SAPS to look into what exactly had happened here, but that hasn't concluded yet. McPherson said it has become clear that the department has been a soft target and playground for over a 10-year period, and this should have been picked up a lot earlier. This money could have been spent on our infrastructure drive to improve the lives of South Africans. So, Michael, I mean, this is a good first story, I think, for the Department of Public Works, for the former opposition to kind of pick up on. But it's just, I think, revealing of how deep the rot is in so much of South Africa's government, is that you've got infiltration all over the place of criminal networks. And I mean, it seems here like there may have very well been people within the department who are actively aiding in the looting of funds.
Yeah, I think that sense of impunity has been profoundly overlooked for a long time. And, you know, just as you were speaking, and describing the story with an expression of outrage in your face, 300 million, sort of using that kind of emphatic language. I think in 1996 we would have fallen over and just, you know, been absolutely flabbergasted at the even the remote possibility of these kinds of sums being involved in theft on this sort of scale or fraud on this sort of scale. And it's a tragedy that that in 2024, you know, it's slightly ho-hum almost, isn't it? I mean, we've seen so many hundreds of millions.
Maybe close to our biggest scandal.
Yeah. And it just does reinforce, as you say, this sense that, you know, criminal networks have been operating with perceived impunity. There just hasn't been enough fight back from the investigators of criminal intelligence and the cops and so on. Though, you know, they have doubtless had signaled successes, and we should always acknowledge that there are very fine investigators at work on many of these cases, and they have you know, achieved signaled successes, but the sums are just so vast and the extent of it is so vast that we do have this terrible feeling that, that, you know, the rot is very extensive and it's going to be very difficult to deal with. One of the interesting things here is Dean McPherson working with his deputy minister, Sihle Zikalala, who was, in fact, he was the minister before. And as the minister, he was the one in May who began the investigation into the most recent 24 million, to kind of loot the department. So there's a kind of, you know, people working together. This is a good sign. I was mentioning before the show started that, you know, one of the tricky things that one could see playing out with these kinds of stories is this quite difficult balancing act where you have an opposition minister newly appointed in the government of national unity, needing obviously to preserve some kind of oppositional leverage on stories like this of this kind, while at the same time needing to nurture this kind of sense of unity of purpose of a new government. So you don't necessarily want to embarrass the establishment overly. but you also want to alert voters that that you are there. You're a new broom and you're sweeping vigorously. So quite an interesting thing all round. But I think overall a very good thing that that we've had a bit of a shake-up in government, and that you have somebody, a minister in the position, being open about what's happening in his department. So I think, yeah, a very telling illustration.
I agree with you completely that this is a difficult political tightrope to walk for the DA and IFP MPs in particular, to sort of, on one hand, continue to campaign for their parties, but on the other hand, not destroy their relationships with their new I don't know what to call them, collaborators in government. And I think also one of the key tests of the government of national unity to see if it's going to get any positive things done is whether, when it comes to rooting out some of these people in the department, and I suspect some of them will very likely be politically connected, or maybe they'll have friends in somewhere else, or friends in the union, or whatever, that they will still be gotten rid of, even when it becomes a little politically a little bit more difficult. And if that can happen, then we may well see positive developments coming from the government of national unity. But if that fails to happen, then we're not going to see a lot of change from this, from how things were before.
No, indeed. And we often reminded that markets are watching us, and I often think there's really two kinds of markets. There's a whole financial market, which is very important, this determines the sentiment in the economy. But there's also the market of ordinary people, to borrow that terrible cliche. But ordinary people, society at large, are also watching, and they also want to know that this new thing that they've been promised is going to be delivering all sorts of benefits is actually going to do so. And neither of those markets has got eternal patience. It is going to be, they're going to be watching, people are going to be watching, and they want to get to be wanting to see, as you say, they want to see results.
All right, let's move on to our next story. And this is a little bit of a discussion about the new Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. Now, on this show before, formerly, I've been very, very critical of that department, particularly under its minister, Ibrahim Patel, who has now left government, retiring. He had a habit of being very orthodox, I think, in his sort of state-centric approach. He was very ideological. He liked to micromanage enormous amounts of the economy. He produced these very big sectorial plans, and he was also very aggressive in shaking down business for concessions. But ultimately, in order to protect a few jobs here or there, he would cost the economy a lot. So I think that he's actually, unfortunately, played a very big role in South Africa's weak economic situation over the last 10 years. So it's very important to have an idea of what exactly the new minister, Parks Tau, is going to be doing. Now, I've heard that Parks Tau is, shall we say, less orthodox, less ideological, and more reform-minded than Ibrahim Patel. And there's a little bit of early signs that this may, in fact, be the case. Parks Tau has firstly started by saying that his working relationship with his two deputies, one of whom is from the DA, I think it's Andrew Whitfield, I think, has started off well. He's talked about bringing in, going to the private sector to identify priority areas to enable implementation of industrial policy and economic transformation. He said, "We do not have to start from scratch. There are 9 industry-based sector master plans that have already been adopted. All we need to do is bring critical stakeholders together and focus on ensuring that these are transformed into implementation to produce the intended results in order to accelerate industrialization, economic growth, and job creation. I will be working in collaboration with my two deputy ministers. I do not anticipate there will be any challenges. We've already started discussing and have identified specific areas around which we would like to work closely together. Our working relationships have started off quite well. We need to address what businesses identified as gaps in the implementation of policy, because we certainly believe that transformation should underpin the work that we do as a department." So there's some talk here about partnering with the private sector, which could be good. It depends very much how it's done. But there's also some worrying signs here about saying, "Oh, we could just take the old sectoral master plans that Ibrahim Patel produced and implement those," which is not good because you need some change in that department. But I think Park's Tao really is also an interesting weather vane of the Government of National Unity's success. So he is a new guy. He is in one of the most, I think, one of the worst policy areas of the ANC government of the last 10 years, that being trade and industry. And if he, and together with his deputies, begins producing more positive policy, I think this is another sign that the Government of National Unity is working, might be working well. So someone to watch very closely. But Michael, what do you make of his sort of opening gambit here? He seems to be also talking up relationship with his deputies here, particularly from the DA, which suggests that he's keen on at least trying to make this thing work.
And I think that's really what we're looking for, what the country would be hoping for, is a kind of pragmatic ethos. Less or nil ideology that, you know, we can borrow from whatever schema or whatever plan is really going to work. It's, you know, it's always a bit worrying when you see things lumped together: industrialization, economic growth, job creation, and transformation. They're all, you know, absolutely wonderful abstract concepts. But really, you know, the one thing that is going to get industry going, get job creation going, and change society is economic growth. So that's really the kind of key motive here, or the key motive force in the society. So I think it's, I mean, you know, he probably needs to say all these things, but it's significant that he is saying that we need to pay attention to what business has identified as problems. So I think he has a sense. It would suggest this report anyway, but that he does have a sense of what the practical issues are, and how they've been identified. They've been identified by practitioners in the economy, and I suppose really ultimately, unlike his predecessor, who tended, as you say, micromanage, he tended to want to step into the economy every 2 seconds and tweak something or do something. The trick really probably with the state of play that we're in right now is to know when and where to just step right away and just let the economy get on with it. It's the people who are in the economy, businesses, succeed as best they can, because that is going to deliver all the best results, the jobs, the real transformation, the industrialization, or whatever it is that needs to happen. Maybe the opposite of industrialization, maybe it's services or you know, fourth generation tech, but just whatever the economy needs, it's people in the economy who will respond to that need and deliver it most efficiently. So good sign, I think. I do remember hearing good things about him not entirely good things, but generally more positive things about him when he was, I think he was city manager in Johannesburg.
He was the mayor of Johannesburg.
Mayor? Okay.
2010s until 2016. Okay. So he was the sort of period before that.
Okay. So not, obviously a difficult period. I'm sure for the city, I'm not really familiar with it, but people who are quite heavily involved in city planning and so on would often speak of him as somebody who was quite switched on and you know, at least had good ideas in his head. So hopefully we have good things to look forward to here.
Yeah, I have sort of slightly mixed views on him, because I was there just as he. I was in the city council just as he lost his mayoralship.
Oh, of course. Right. Okay.
He was the leader of the ANC opposition in council for a while. But he was generally regarded as one of the better mayors that the ANC had in the country that they had put in charge of Joburg. There is also this long tradition of the ANC sort of going to everyone saying, oh, don't worry, we're going to talk to all the stakeholders, telling each audience what they want to hear, and then just doing what they wanted to do anyway. But whether that actually is the case here, I think will become very quickly apparent. We'll see whether Park's Tao really is, you know, more of the same, or whether he is going to do something a little bit differently, producing a good working relationship with his DA deputy. All right. Very, very briefly, there is a worrying sign for South African-American relations. There is now very clearly within the US House of Representatives, which is their lower chamber of their legislature, an anti-South African lobby that has not, shall we say, particularly pleased with the South African government's foreign policy. A bipartisan initiative which has called for a full review of Washington's bilateral ties with South Africa took place. This was put into a bill and took the vote on it in the U.S. Congress took place back in on our election day. It calls for also an investigation into South Africa's defense cooperation with Russia, China, and Iran. And this will oblige the American administration of Joe Biden to review and present a report to Congress. So this could be the first step in excluding South Africa from something like the African Growth and Opportunity Act, which is essentially a sort of a free trade agreement where we're able to sell things without tariffs to the United States. This was, considering how polarized America is right now, this was actually quite a, relatively speaking, bipartisan piece of legislation. It got 211 Republican votes and one Republican voting no, and it got 61 votes from the Democrats with 143 Democrats voting no. But definitely a more Republican thing than Democrat thing, but both parties have significant support for it. This, I think, is very clearly the result of South Africa's decisions to kind of get involved in these sort of overseas disputes that we didn't have a lot of ability to influence. But boy, howdy, did we annoy the Americans in that sort of stuff. And I think particularly our apparent friendliness towards Iran was probably the straw that broke the camel's back. But of course, the South African case of taking Israel to the International Court of Justice was also a very big factor in this. Michael, what do you make of this?
I think, you know, we obviously, and with good reason, preoccupied with our domestic issues at the moment, but this does bring home to us that, you know, global issues really matter, and they matter not least because they have really profound domestic consequences, or can have. And I think this is a very good instance of this. We need to pay attention to our relationship with the world and who we relate to and how we relate to them. I often think that the diplomats are among the coolest headed people around, and they tend to prefer to sustain ties than to sever them. They tend not to want to rush off and build divisions between other countries, because they're always conscious of, you know, needing to be in touch with the world, needing to know what's going on, and needing to have at least the opportunity to build allies when that's needed. But despite that, I think there is a risk in South Africa's often somewhat reckless pursuit of international relations, and that we do really need to keep a close eye on who our real allies are and why.
Exactly, and this is going to be the big challenge for the new international relations minister, Robert Lamola. This is if, you know, he's basically going to have to work to undo some of the damage that Naledi Pandor did. And if he does it, if he continues along the same sort of path, it's going to cost South Africa, I think, quite a lot without much to gain for it. But anyway, something to keep a close eye on. I think the Biden administration is not particularly keen on cutting any sort of relations with South Africa, but I do suspect the Trump administration would be much more open to that sort of thing. And Trump is currently the front runner for the U.S. presidency. So South African government better come up with a plan if the U.S. administration suddenly becomes more hostile. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.